Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchlist.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined in our first podcast post trade deadline by Nick Pollock.
What is happening? It's good to see you, Eric.
You too.
And, we have so many things to talk about.
We do. Course. I saw you briefly on your live stream for the trade deadline.
Yeah, that was great. Was fun. Thank you so great much time. For tuning in. You did a great job on yours as well. With James Shiano, as always.
Thank you.
It's so funny to me that it's you and James, because like these are two of my favorite people who are not officially part of the writing staff here at Pitcherless. So
it's great. Yeah, it is. It's been fun doing that with James. It was fun hopping on with you and Paul for a little while. You know, and then had to do some dad duties, but it was a very eventful trade deadline. A lot of fun. We're going to go through, obviously, as we do, the pitching matchups for this weekend and next week. So this will give us a chance to kind of talk about some of these new look rotations and how things are shaping up. So we're not going to belabor any points. We're going to dive right in. We're going to start with the NL East, because the team we're going to start with is a team that I just don't understand what they did at the trade deadline. The Atlanta Braves tried to get Jacob DeGrom. They tried to get Logan Webb, and they were like, we'll just take Tyler Mahle and we'll call it a day. And so the Braves rotation is fairly similar. It's three this weekend against the Yankees, three against the Mets next week, three against the Diamondbacks. That's two start week for Bryce Elder, but Bryce Elder, Martin Perez, Reynaldo Lopez, Grant Holmes, they are all still in the rotation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, Bryce Elder, last four games, two earned runs, one earned run, one earned run. Like, it's not as if Bryce Elder has been the worst thing ever. He had this stretch 5-3-2-6-8-5-3. Those are earned run totals, guys, from the end of May to start of July, but I understand where they're like, you know what? This has worked so far. We'll have Chris Sale. And Tyler Mahle, not the worst ad. I know a lot of people are saying, oh gosh, that's whatever. But he's actually up to 94 now. And in traditional Atlanta fashion, they find a way. Look at Martin Perez and Reynaldo Lopez, for example.
I'm a little worried about the home runs in that park.
I mean, I would always, but it's, you know. I never know.
Yes.
It's not so bad.
And we should note that before AJ Smith-Shawver's AAA start on Tuesday, Alex Anthopoulos, the Braves general manager, said he'll make two starts and then probably rejoin the rotation. They're just trying to get him more stretched out, right? And more games under his belt with like 5+ innings. We saw in his season debut, he looked pretty good for 4 innings against the Mets, or at least he looked solid. I know you have some issues with the whiffs, but he was doing fine. Yeah. And then he got fatigued because, you know, it's his first, he's coming off Tommy John and he hasn't pitched deep into games. And so I think you're going to get one more start from AJ Smith-Shawver. And then he is, in my opinion, he is going to join the rotation. I think he's a better bet than guys like Grant Holmes, Martin Perez. Grant Holmes has pitched out of the bullpen before. You can move him there. So I'd expect, you know, Mahle in the rotation, Smith-Shawver in the rotation. But, you know, you're going to get another week of these guys where you're obviously starting Chris Sale. And then between Reynaldo Lopez and Grant Holmes, would you start either against Arizona next week?
No, okay. I would not. I mean, I understand a 15-teamer weekly league, Bryce Elder is fine. Taking that chance, I understand. I have him a do's not starts for both of them because I just, again, do not trust this. What do you know? Surprise. Reynaldo Lopez also is expected to come back from the IL where he had diminished velocity, and it was really concerning. I'm not surprised he went on the IL. It is interesting because it really should be Tyler Mahle, I think, on that Friday.
I wonder if it's Holmes that would leave the rotation
rather than Mahle. I think that's right. And then after that, but the thing is also, I mean, Reynaldo Lopez, I don't think he's really going to come back. I think he's actually more hurt than they're letting on. I could be wrong about that. But if he does stick around, then it is an interesting decision. Elder, Perez, and Lopez, who gets the axe for AJ Smith-Shawver then? Also, AJ Smith-Shawver, look, two whiffs on 44 fastballs, 19 splitters, one each. That is so disappointing considering that the secondaries otherwise are just not good. Like, I mean, yeah, maybe there's this cutter slider kind of thing that is a stabilizer, but it's nothing that I am excited about with AJ Smith-Shawver. So I would not be chasing that until I finally see something out of it. If you want to spec, I'd fine, but I wouldn't be going for that.
And we could see it in a minor league dashboard that somebody created. We could look at exactly what he's doing in his next start. Moving on to Miami, they get the Angels this weekend. They get Pittsburgh and at Cincinnati next week. It's going to be a two-start week for Yuri Perez, which you love to see because, you know, even though he wasn't tremendous yesterday, whatever, Yuri Perez is pitching well and you love it in a two-start week. Sandy Alcantara is also going to be a start in Cincinnati. And then the rest of the rotation is Jansen Junk, Tyler Phillips, Ryan Gusto. Are you... It seems like, and this is going to be it. We know that Max Meyer, they hope, will eventually come back, but we don't have a date for that. They're falling out of the playoff race. So there's some questions about when Meyer comes back. Between Phillips and Gusto and Junk, do you have any interest in any of them in these for these upcoming games?
Well, I mean, Gusto, I was talking about this with Eno, did something different where it looks like he's, I mean, we've been seeing him with a couple guys. He is going a little bit more with cut four-seamers and he got dropping everything. It's interesting. Tyler Phillips has also been okay, and it might be worthwhile for both Phillips and Gusto. I know we've talked about both of those guys and be like, hey, they're not so bad, and then they weren't very good. But now, again, they have been interesting. So I can understand for a desperate weekend, Tyler Phillips and or Gusto could return value for you. But against the Pirates for Phillips and at Cincinnati for Gusto, I'm not interested in those. Otherwise, I mean, Yuri Perez, I know he just got hit around on Wednesday, but I'm still not worried about it.
Yeah, so Nick is talking about Phillips and Gusto this weekend against the Angels are in deeper formats if you want to take a gamble. And then I'll just keep saying that I am intrigued enough by Jansen Junk that I will keep an eye on his starts because I think that the arsenal should be better than it's performing. I'm not going to pitch him against Pittsburgh, but Junk is still somebody, it wouldn't surprise me if it clicks into place at some point in time. The aforementioned Mets get three at Pittsburgh this weekend. Then they get Atlanta and Washington next week. It's two-start week for Christian Scott at Atlanta and then home against Washington. In what leagues does that intrigue you?
Robert Stock, by the way, I will say, is kind of interesting. Like, he is throwing a 96 and 92 on the four-seamer and the cutter and really leading with that. But he's not going very long in it, and it's a cutter that is just horizontal. It just goes to the left of the four-seamer. It doesn't even have drop. It's strange. I don't know if I really want to go after it against the Pirates, who are good against right-handers, and then the Nationals, who are also a very good offense. Christian Scott might be better. I am worried about the ability to take down left-handers. We did see him struggle a little bit about that yesterday against the Guardians as well, and there's still more development left, I think, for Christian Scott before I go after it. What he did yesterday, he tried to do the Cannibal McSanchez of those cutters upstairs for called strikes, as Eric's neck is just really sore.
I just gotta
get it out. And it looks like you're trying to get rid of water from one of your ears.
No, that would be
but the Cannibal McSanchez is when you're trying to get cutters for called strikes at the top of the zone. We had those four seamers going a little bit higher. That is what Cannibal Sanchez and Colin McHugh used to do. And he also had the sweepers coming in for called strikes, and he got tons of strikes finally, 72%. And he still had two walks, and he allowed a few too many hits. He had 15 whiffs. It is a better approach. It's not one that I'm just like, all right, you're done, you're good, but it is promising. Is it enough for me to go at Atlanta and do well again there? I don't know. I am a little more favorable with Washington after. So it's up to you guys if you really want to do that in a two-step. I get that. 15 team, you have to. 12, I'm not sold that Christian Scott has truly turned the corner yet.
I do want to point out, we've talked a lot this year about the Nationals matchup, and we should just note that Curtis Meade, Luis Garcia were traded at the deadline. Wood has been put on the IL with an oblique injury.
Really good point.
And so that Nationals lineup, as currently constructed, is not the Nationals lineup that was producing so many runs for the vast majority of the season.
I appreciate that. I'm actually going to change things because of that. I am going to put Chamania into the question role now for that one, as guys have been struggling to hit his four-seamer, and he is throwing 91, 92 now, which is a little bit more interesting too. So maybe even Robert Stock there could be a little interesting. I'm going to put both of those guys actually as questionables now, because that should be a bad Nationals offense.
Yeah, there you go. So keep an eye on that. Moving to the Phillies, another team where, like, I guess we're just going into the postseason with Andrew Painter as our fifth starter and Aaron Nola as our fourth starter. I thought we were going to make a move here. You can talk about something in a second. We get Toronto this weekend, Louis. Then there is a three-game series at Minnesota with a weird Friday off day thrown in there. So it's Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. But it's two-start week for Andrew Painter. It's St. Louis and Minnesota. Painter is back up in the rotation. Now, he spoke very publicly about realizing after like getting hit around in AAA that he needed to zone his secondary pitches far more often, that he was throwing them outside of the zone. He was trying basically to only get chases, but people weren't offering. And so he had to only come, he had to come in the zone with the fastball. Then the fastball was getting hit. And so, you know, he took that lesson into a fine return to the rotation. It wasn't, you know, like, oh my God, this guy's a top prospect again, but it was fine. And so I think that Painter will be on the radar as a waiver pickup this weekend. And so I'm curious with what you saw and this two-start week, how interested you are in Andrew Painter.
So Andrew Painter did two things that were really good, right? Exactly what you mentioned of better pitching backward. That is getting strikes finally with his secondaries, as opposed to the four seamers leading the way, which is exactly what it should be. It's kind of the Kadish rule of you have a cut four seamer that isn't necessarily slow, but it is hittable. And you have to figure that out. You can't really utilize that as your ball in play pitch. You have to use that as your hopefully foul ball or maybe a surprise pitch to get a quick out as opposed to what they're leaning on. And he commanded them really well. I mean, the sweeper looked really good. The what I really liked, though, more so was the changeup that got introduced. He's not throwing the splitters anymore. It's really this changeup that goes down and away from left-handers. It's around the outside edge. Like, that's good. Like, it was a good changeup. So I'm actually kind of curious now if he's throwing, I don't know, 60, 70% secondaries, then Andrew Painter, who was known as a command pitcher way back when, I mean, yes, he had 100 plus, you know, mile per hour fastballs, but even before then or after then, it was like, hey, he's really good with his command, necessarily his stuff as much. This was the first showcase like, oh, hey, this is an approach that actually works. And if you can execute this, you are the number four now on the Phillies. So I wonder if the Phillies actually felt that what they saw from Andrew Painter was good enough.
Maybe.
That they didn't feel the need to get the depth. The thing is, after Andrew Painter, what is there with the Phillies? I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. So I'm very curious how this plays out for them. Aaron Nola, I cannot touch whatsoever. Yeah. And that's it there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, Sanchez, Wheeler, and Lizardo, you're always kind of rolling with. And so Painter for me is certainly an option in 12 team leagues with the two start week. And for sure in 15 team leagues, that Cardinals offense was a really nice story for the first maybe 2 months of the season. And it has fallen on hard times. And so I'm not opposed to that start. Washington, they get Cincinnati this weekend, Chicago next week, and the Mets. It's a two start week for Jake Irvin, which is not particularly inspiring if you're in deeper formats and you wanted to throw Jake Irvin against the Mets over the weekend, maybe, but I'm not running that out for the two-start week. I wanted to talk to you about Andrew Alvarez because he had his longest start of his major league career in his last start. Now that Foster Griffin is out of the rotation, and I think now that it's pretty clear the Nationals, even though they are hovering around the playoffs, I think they are saying, hey, we have some good young pieces and we're going to try to make this a team that can contend in perpetuity. And so I think we might start to see them push Alvarez deeper into games, try to get a little more out of him. He has had some intriguing swing and miss stuff throughout the year, but he hasn't pitched deep into games and the command is iffy. But I'm curious if we see Andrew Alvarez with a longer leash, is that something that intrigues you at all?
So when you say longer leash, are you saying innings or pitches?
I'm thinking, I mean, I what I'm saying is innings in the sense that I think they'll let him pitch through some things a little more often. Mm. I know that he has had high pitch counts in the past because the command has been problematic, but I think that maybe you might see them allow him to pitch out of some like fifth inning jams that earlier on they would have just taken him out of.
Yeah. So Andrew Alvarez finally did go 6.1 innings. It was only a second time of going at least five in full. He went 5.2 before. So first one at six or more. However, the pitch count was right in the average of what we've seen of the range that we've seen around like low 80s, essentially 82, I think it was. So that isn't as encouraging as I thought it was initially. And this, it's a common makeup of two secondaries that get whiffs, the curveball and the slider, with very hittable fastballs. Mm-hmm. Does not have that changeup like you normally would see with a southpaw too. So he's more of that supinator, that spin guy, than he is that pronating type. And it can work for some strikeouts. We have seen like 22% strikeout rates this year for Andrew Alvarez, but I think the fastballs are just too hittable. He's not that efficient pitcher yet. And yes, they'll push him more, but it's not necessarily the kind of guy that I would want to go for. In 15 teams, maybe if you are really trying to find some strikeouts, yeah, he could find himself getting six innings at that strikeout rate. Otherwise, when I look at this Nationals team, I see Kay Cavalli, who is really pushing up into close of the absolute auto start here, which actually I think I'm going to push Kay Cavalli into for the Reds at the very least. You have Jake Irvin, who is kind of interesting. Again, I mean, he's throwing these cutters that are harder. He had a successful 5.1 inning game last night with seven strikeouts. With seven whiffs and three strikeouts. I don't want to overlook the fact that he's throwing a 90 mile per hour cutter now, which is a tick and a half more than it used to. And he's throwing it 24% of the time. He's getting strikes on that. He has this curveball that used to be amazing. Mm-hmm. And with a 24% swing strike rate at 82% strikes yesterday. That is on Wednesday. Don't want to overlook it. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, it was 200 runs, 3 Ks. Like, he didn't have a good put-away rate, 23%, but he did get to a lot of two strikeouts. Yeah. So the way I see it with Jake Irvin is just pay attention. Don't necessarily go after it. If you are in a desperate situation in a 15-teamer, I would think about Jake Irvin. That's all I'm getting at there.
The Andrew Alvarez thing for me is, like, I think if you looked at Quinn Matthews and you were like, ooh, I'm excited for Quinn Matthews, and then he got sent back down by the Cardinals, and you want another lefty with potential strikeout upside and really questionable command, that's kind of Andrew.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. There's also Luis Perales, by the way, who eventually will come up. And what he's done recently, it's 5 innings, 4.2 innings, 5 innings, 5 innings with pitch counts that have been going up. I talked about him a lot on The Craft yesterday with Eno Saris. 86, 79, 95, 95. Those are the last four games of pitch counts for Luis Perales. And if you don't know him, he throws 98 and 99 with four seamers with 17 inches of vert. However, he does have a generally high arm angle, so it's not really like the most deceptive one. 11% swing strike rate, but think of him kind of as a Logan Henderson type with a changeup that can miss a lot of bats. It is a 23% swing strike rate on that changeup across the season. He can throw it against right-handers too. And then you have a cutter that is a big strike pitch for him, 62% strikes. Mm-hmm. It is 92, 93. And the big question has been with Luis Perales, can you stop walking, guys? It's a 13% walk rate on the season. Even in those four games I just mentioned where the pitch counts are going up, 5 walks, 2 walks, 5 walks, 2 walks. So expect him to come in eventually. There is Trevor Williams coming back soon. Do not care. Never Trevor. And otherwise, it's Miles Michaelis. So I got to think that once the rookie eligibility is good for next year, which I believe is around August 17th, around there, then you'll have Luis Perales appear with the Nationals. He's someone to watch. And we are going to jump to the NL Central after this break.
And we are going to start jumping through things a little faster than we did, which is, you know, we're going to run a little long here.
On this podcast,
as is known. The Cubs. We got three against the Royals, three against Washington, and three against St. Louis. We are going to see Kevin Gausman and Clay Holmes make their Cubs debuts over the weekend. Also, Clay Holmes gets the Royals over the weekend, gets St. Louis next week, at Seattle the start after that. I know Clay Holmes has been floating out there in a lot of leagues because he was on the IL with the fibula issue. I think that run for Clay Holmes with this Cubs defense behind him of Royals, Cardinals, Mariners, he'd be one of my priority ads if I need pitching and he's on my wire. I don't think you're going to get a ton of strikeouts, but I think the ratio should be solid. I think that Cubs defense will vacuum up ground balls, and six inning stints for Clay Holmes feel very likely. So if you're in a quality start league in particular, I think that he could have tons of value there.
Yeah, I think they added some foundation to the Adobe here in Chicago. And really, it's so funny. I was doing these for some reason, and I love it, that Toronto called me twice on the radio on Friday. No place else, just Toronto last week. And they were about, okay, cool. Who are the trade deadline guys, right? It was 10:50 and it was Sportsnet. And I kept saying, like, every guy, I was like, oh, the Cubs are a good fit. The Cubs are a good fit. I felt like I was saying that, but it was really just Kevin Gausman and Clay Holmes. Both are guys that are very BABIP oriented and reliant, where Kevin Gausman does not walk guys and Clay Holmes throws a lot more sinkers than he used to even now. So this is such a good fit for both. I absolutely agree with you, Eric. Clay Holmes is a really good fit for this team and could be better than a questionable start next week against St. Louis. I might even push him up into probable as long as I like what I see on Saturday. It's a still ill, but he did throw 73 pitches in his final rehab start that everyone watched at Brooklyn Cyclones. And I should have been there, Eric. We should have been there. We weren't. It's fine. But otherwise, I mean, you have Javier Assad and David Peterson also against the Nationals next week. And I just upgraded them from do not start to questionable start based on what you said about that lineup, which is so true. That is a much worse lineup now. And with Peterson actually throwing sinkers and four-seamers where he wants to for once, it is working out in his favor to be that six-inning low-ratio quality start guy. And Javier Assad just kind of does Javier Assad weirdness. So, all right, there you go.
So do you think that Javier Assad leaves the rotation, though? Because Gausman, Holmes, right. Boyd, Imanaga, and right. then it's Peterson or Assad. Right. Assad's minor league options, by the way.
Sure. I think Assad will in time. There's also Colin Ray to imagine, and I feel really bad also for Colin Ray because he's really taken advantage of so many guys. I think it was a 3.58 ERA that he had, and it's just, what's going on here? Look, it's a lot of options that they have, which is a phenomenal thing for a Cubs team that has been through the ringer when it comes to starting pitching. And all of a sudden now they have a plethora of options, which is great. So I do think it would be Assad. It could be six man stuff. Like if this is effective enough, why not? You're going to preserve all these guys for the playoffs, all that fun stuff. But we're going to move faster through this. I'm going to go through the Reds really quickly. I apologize, Eric. I'm going to do it for you. Cincinnati's pretty easy. You don't have Hunter Green because Hunter Green is on the IL with elbow soreness. We have not seen it yet from Hunter Green to be on the IL with that elbow soreness. We thought it would be for ages considering his velocity, and here it is, and it's very sad. What it does mean is that Chase Petty is going to be entering the rotation, at least in the short term. So covering right now as Chase Burns goes against the Nationals tomorrow, then Chase Petty, and then Brady Singer. And then next week you have three against the White Sox at the White Sox and three at home hosting the Marlins. That's going to be Nick Lodolo, Rhett Lauder, and Abbott against the White Sox. Burns, Singer, and Lodolo against the Marlins. Nick Lodolo will be coming back from his injury likely against the White Sox. That's a still ill for me. And then, of course, I expect him to be fine and good for the Marlins after. Brady Singer is doing Brady Singer things with sliders down and sinkers getting called strikes. And it's classic Brady Singer, maybe with a little few more cutters than there used to be. But still, it's classic him. So, yeah, he's against the Nationals. I'll take that one now because that lineup is bad in Washington. And then Miami, sure, that's fine for a quality start. Andrew Abbott's doing Andrew Abbott things. He's actually starting today for Hunter Green. The game pushed up a game for that injury. And then, of course, Chase Burns is Chase Burns. I don't want to overlook Rhett Lauder because Rhett Lauder has quietly been decent once again because he has a slider and a changeup that are effective and fastballs that can get outs. So if you're really desperate for something next Wednesday that is at Chicago White Sox, it's not out of the question that Rhett Lauder just goes 5 1/3 with 200 runs or so. It could even go 6 possibly with 2. So don't overlook that one next week.
Yeah, and I will just say I blurbed Lodolo because he started in AAA yesterday. Was not a tremendous start, only threw 57% of his pitches for strikes, only threw 65 total pitches. It would not surprise me if Lodolo has one more rehab start in him. And so just keep an eye on that. I don't think it's a lock that he comes back next week. Milwaukee, Minnesota this weekend, and then three against San Diego next week, four against the Dodgers. So it's a two-start week for both Logan Henderson. Oh, actually, they're running a six-man rotation. So it's just a two-start week for Logan Henderson. It looks like Brandon Sproat is out of the rotation right now. I would assume, unless I missed a transaction, I don't believe that he was demoted. And so,
yeah, it's really right
he
now,
was demoted.
Kind of figuring out what is going to happen with this. They did demote Brandon Sproat.
Demoted Sproat. So we're still thinking there may be some sort of piggyback situation with Drohan and Gasser, but it would have to be Chad Patrick or Bryce Wilson. So those guys could operate as per usual. But Drohan and Gasser both get the Dodgers next week, so they would be starts that I would particularly avoid.
Yeah, it's a 7-game week, right? So I'm not surprised if the Brewers say, you know what, let's do a 6-man just for one more week here, as it is a long stretch, and they want to make sure that everybody has their rest, because we do expect the Brewers to be in the playoffs. And let's be honest, Mizorowski, Henderson, Harrison, May is a really good 1-4. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people were angry at the Brewers for not offering enough for Skubal. They did offer a good deal and the Tigers just wanted a pitcher in River Ryan instead. But what I do see here is Gausser is not terrible right now. He's actually looking all right and executing enough, and he gets a poor Twins lineup. And then you also have Drouin today, or sorry, rather on Friday, also getting them. I like both of them there. I think ultimately Drouin does win the position over Gausser. I think these two games right now are really going to dictate that, honestly. And maybe we'll see what happens with the Dodgers, but as that would be necessarily like playoff hinting. But otherwise, I mean, I think you're just starting all these guys through. Dustin May and Henderson are right now as probables. I might even upgrade Logan Henderson to an auto against the Dodgers just because he's been that good.
Yeah, and Henderson auto against the Padres for sure. Moving to the Pirates, Carmen Wodzinski is back in the rotation because Mitch Keller has gone on the IL. They have the Mets this weekend, Miami and Boston next week. It's two-start week for Paul Skeens. Are you starting? But actually, I do have some questions about, are you worried about Paul Skeens?
Because there's I am a little bit just because, you know, we do it. Yes, the velocity is down on the four-seamer. Now, Eric, I got to tell you, Jake Crumpler has done such an amazing job with the ESPN roundups covering me for the weekends. And go and read his breakdown of Paul Skeens last weekend. It's incredible. It's essentially its own article. Is just that top bit. It's longer than even my leads. And what he really highlights is the fact that Paul Skeens' four-seamer is getting the exact same results as last year. But there are two differences. One, obviously the velocity. And two is the location. He's actually getting it better, you could say, upstairs more. Now, what that does do is it does mean that the other pitches in his arsenal are reactive to something else. It is not as fast. And it is also not in the, it's less deceptive, you could say, because the four-seamer is having different kind of separation and there isn't a massive amount of vert on that four-seamer. So it does mean that guys are possibly picking up the other pitches more and everything else has like a lot more hard contact to it. So look, if you're not throwing 98 and you're throwing 96 and change, that's a 2 mile per hour difference that really eases the at-bat for hitters and allows them to adjust more, right? I personally think that once he gets the splinker working again and properly, then you're actually talking about old Paul Skeens. That to me is really what was the difference maker, where you have this really hard four-seamer and then you have the splinker that looks just like it is also really hard, and that has not been as effective. Do I think that Paul Skeens is just donezo? No. I think what's actually really interesting is most of the time when it comes to prospects, I get really excited, not when they first come up necessarily. I mean, of course I do. It's once they go through their first wave of adversity and succeed after, right? Skeens has never had it. He's never had it before. So once we actually see Skeens excel after this, I'm in. For other guys, just to go past this quickly, we have 47 pitches in the last game for Miljinski. So don't expect him to go long against the Mets, nor against the Marlins. Bubba Chandler is throwing this hard cutter now, I want to say, at 93, and it's fine. It's good. It's a strike pitch, but that means you have to execute the four-seamer upstairs to actually get your whiffs, and he's not doing that. And same thing really with Jared Jones. He's just not throwing that high four-seamer and getting those whiffs on it yet, and it's really annoying. Last game was really low four-seamers, and that's not fun whatsoever. And Ashcraft, I'm not too worried about. He is getting away with a little bit on lefties, and he still needs to figure them out just a bit, but you're going to start him against the Marlins.
Yep. Moving to the Cardinals, they get the Rockies at home this weekend, so not in Coors. They get Philadelphia and Cleveland and Chicago Cubs next week. It's two-start week for Hunter Dobbins, who has moved into the rotation since Dustin May was traded away. I'm curious, in any leagues are you interested in adding Hunter Dobbins? It's not a great two-start week, Phillies, Cubs, but he is in the rotation and it is two starts.
Okay, so have you spent some time looking at Hunter Dobbins, haven't you?
You must. Yes.
Okay, tell me what you saw, because
not as much this year. I was obviously more locked in on him previously when he was with the Red Sox.
Did you see his last start? I mean, you can't watch everyone.
I saw some of it, but not enough. I saw like
two. Okay, so Hunter Dobbins, if you guys are not aware, you didn't listen to the craft yesterday, you didn't hear me like jokingly write about him in the roundup on Tuesday night. Hunter Dobbins is now throwing a cut four seamer, like a proper one that is a negative horizontal of like -2. And his start on Tuesday was one of the most textbook, beautiful pitch separation games you can imagine, of four seamers with this cut action getting inside to lefties and then curveballs and splitters down and away gorgeously to left-handers. And then you have cutters and sliders and actually away four seamers with that cut to right-handers just completely down a line. The only thing I would improve there would be more sinkers inside properly to right-handers. But it is a way different under Dobbins. I mean, I think before we were thinking of him as like, yes, these are all pitches and they're all generally average and like that could work. Maybe like slight above average here and there, but it's never been this polished like, oh man, okay, cool. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It's just kind of, here's my things. And I hope this works. This is actually like, all right, I've gone to the lab. I see the montage of the architect making all the things with a ruler and going this and this and that, you know, and all the piece of paper thrown into the trash. And he finally looks back and goes, I've got it. Like, that's what it felt like on Tuesday night. I don't know if that's going to stick, but I am so intrigued by this from Hunter Dobbins, especially with that defense in that park. So I am so curious hosting the Phillies next week and then at Cubs. That could be much better than we've seen so far for Hunter Dobbins, or it could just blow up because it was just one start.
Yeah, I'm intrigued in deeper formats. I've had some shares in 15-team leagues, and I don't love this two-start week, but you know, you might need to. So, but that's a decent add. Another team that I thought should have added at the trade deadline is the Diamondbacks. They have three against the Dodgers this weekend, three at home against the Rockies next week, and then three at Atlanta. As of right now, they're expected to get Michael Soroka back in the rotation at some point next week. He threw Tuesday. Before that start, Diamondbacks manager Torey Lavulu said that he expected that Soroka would only need one rehab start. Now, he threw 57 pitches. He threw 37 of those 57 pitches for strikes. He went four innings. So even if you do get Soroka, you're probably getting Soroka around 70-ish pitches in his first start off the IL. So even if that came against the Rockies in Arizona, it just doesn't have the same amount of upside that you would want generally. But listen, Soroka's been good this year. And if he's back and stretched out on a potential playoff team, that's still a valuable pitcher. I think that you and I are both in agreement that what Brandon Pfaadt is doing right now is real in the sense that he is really becoming a command pitcher who will help ratios because he is inducing weak contact and filling up the zone, but the strikeouts are almost all gone. And so that's tough in his next two games against teams like the Dodgers and the Braves, where like, what is the upshot of starting Brandon Pfaadt in those ones?
Yeah.
And then I'm curious if you had thoughts on Mitch Bratt's last outing.
So Mitch Bratt is hilarious to me because I cannot get this out of my head that Mitch Bratt just throws these pitches and he goes, Bratt, like it's just a shotgun blast of a lot of things. I mean, that's what I would be doing every time.
Sure.
But this wasn't that necessarily. This was curveballs and sliders actually being back foot like beautifully against right-handers. I mean, it was kind of insane how effective these were. He didn't get as many whiffs as you would think. Only 40% strikes also on the slider and just 11% whiffs. That is 2/19. But they worked. They were very, very effective. They got three outs on three balls in play with that curveball. And it didn't mean that the four-seamer up and away was along that tunnel and was also effective at 76% strikes and a 36% CSW against right-handers. Now, I don't know if this is that good. Like, I talk about guys that go high four-seamers with low breaking balls to right-handers from the left side a bit. Like, Connor Prelip comes to mind and Reed Detmers comes to mind. And those guys have better breaking balls. This slider is kind of more like a cutter at its movement. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the velocity difference of like 91 to 87 also suggested. I mean, I'm not joking. It's 10 inches of vert here and like a 3-inch difference of horizontal. Like, this is not a big change here. So not effective for that reason. He should be treating it more like a cutter and getting up and in. And this is the best command I've also seen from Bratt as far as actually executing a game plan, even though the changeup is still like really bad. He cannot get that thing down as I want him to. So I'm not really buying this one. This is against the Padres, who are not an exceptional offense against lefties. It is Rocky Road next, as you mentioned. And it's possible that I am undervaluing that one and I could push him up into questionable after this. I mean, look, it was 7 innings shutout of 9 strikeouts. How could I not? He had more strikeouts than whiffs, Eric. And when you see that, it's a little weird.
Didn't we see that like a month ago with Dustin May? I think when he had that like 11 strikeout game and he had very few whiffs. Yeah. I'm with you where like Bratt is somebody in a 15 team league in a deeper format. Like, you've got Colorado in Arizona on Monday. And that is intriguing to me. If I am the Diamondbacks, I would rather keep Mitch Bratt in the rotation when Soroka comes back than Cole Drake. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out. And we'll also see when Soroka comes back. Right now, Fangraphs doesn't have him starting until next Sunday, but his last rehab start was Tuesday. And so if he is only going to get that one rehab start, he probably comes back for that Colorado series. So we'll see how that changes up the rotation.
Yeah, and keep in mind, when you say Fangraphs has it, of course, you're talking about RotoWire, because yes. They use the same feed. They have the same feed that we'd use here at PitcherList for our stuff. So it's RotoWire making that decision.
RotoWire. There you go. Thank you, RotoWire. And,
yes.
Speaking of those Rockies, we're not going to talk about their starting pitchers, and I can't believe they didn't trade any of their expiring contracts. I know that somebody would have taken Michael Lorenzen, I'm sure.
No, they wouldn't have, Eric.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Do you realize how bad Michael Lorenzen has been this year?
An 18-year-old playing somewhere in the Florida League.
No.
You're Lorenzen.
I disagree. Every team's 40-man does not want Michael Lorenzen.
He can pitch out of the bullpen as well. No. How about Tomoyuki Sugano? He's actually pitching pretty
well.
Maybe
him. But I think they want Sugano. They want to re-sign Sugano. Sugano has, 11 wins now or something? It's like hilarious.
Moves the Rockies. It's the same front office and the different front office and the same thing, making no trades whatsoever.
I mean, yeah, not that issue, but it's not like they could have dealt those guys.
Moving on to the Dodgers, who traded for a lefty that got hit so hard in his first start that we just don't even care about him anymore. But no, the Dodgers get 3 at Arizona this weekend. 3 against Kansas City next week, and then 4 against the Brewers. It's going to be a two-start week, most likely, for Tarek Skubal, because even though they're a 6-man, it's a 7-game week. We should see Blake Snell return against the Royals. They said that last rehab start was his last one. He allowed 3 runs on 5 hits in 3 2/3 innings for AAA Oklahoma City because he had 4 walks. And he threw just 41 of his 73 pitches for strikes, but the velocity looked good and he threw 73 pitches. So he's probably going to be up in the mid 80s in terms of pitch count against a pretty mediocre Royals team that's without some of their bigger bats. And that's, 85 pitches is probably enough to go 5 innings. You know, with Snell, you never know with command. Yeah. And that get you a win for the Dodgers against the Royals. So, we're usually still ill, and I agree with you on that. If you are hunting wins and you are okay with the fact that Blake Snell could do real damage to your whip in that start, you could start him in that one. He probably is a good shot of getting a win.
Yeah, I would actually be more interested in whoever is expected to follow, because I wouldn't be surprised if he gets pulled after 4 and they don't want to push him. And in Blake Snell, we just don't really know where we're going to get. Of course, it's a still ill, as you mentioned. I've been doing with still ills is putting them in questionable for like the aces. So fine, Snell, you're there. Hopefully it's still summer for you. And Eric Lauer, by the way, got shelled finally. It was his first game as a Dodger, not going at least 5 innings and also allowing more than 300 runs. It was 600 runs and 11 hits in 4 innings. Just 1 strike. And how am I supposed to butter my bread with this? It wasn't a good game. It just wasn't. It was against the Cubs. He's going to get the Royals next. And honestly, I think that's still a decent chance at a win. I wouldn't be surprised also if the Dodgers decide to just throw a bullpen game in there, even though it's Tarek Skubal and all of that. It just, I think even for Sasaki, Yamamoto, Robleski, and Skubal, it still would be a 2-start for them. Mm-hmm. And they like making it so that everyone gets their 6-day rest. So what happens is that on Thursday next week is a game where they don't really expect it. That is the one I think you might have a bullpen game. Maybe you might have actually the Kansas City game for Lauer. Actually, that would be more in line. Then you would have that as a bullpen game, which means that it's Milwaukee instead of Kansas City for Lauer. And that's still the same situation.
Yeah. Another team that made changes to the rotation, the Padres. They have 3 against Houston this weekend, 3 against Milwaukee, and 3 at Cleveland next week. It's 2-start week for Casey Mize, whose first start with his new team was not great. He gets Milwaukee and Cleveland. I think that we both kind of agreed that like the 2.7 ERA for Mize was probably not an indication of how talented he is, but the improvements to the slider during this year were very real. And I don't think that Casey Mize is bad again. And so I think that that's a 2-start week that I would probably use, because even though the Milwaukee start isn't great, it's in San Diego. And then I get the Cleveland start afterwards, and Mize has been fine for most of the year. And so I think I'm okay with that, even in a 12-team league.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how to translate this one because I was under the impression that Mize was hurt. And because he really had this massive velocity drop in his last start. And what's good here is that we did see 93 consistently. It was 93.6, then 93.1, then 94, then 94 in his four innings of yesterday's game. We did see the first pitch of most innings were around 90, 91. And then he would push it after that. So I guess that's just kind of like what he does now. Keep in mind, though, that the minimum before the scary velocity game was like 93, right? That was the minimum of a game. And now we're still at 91, which is a little concerning. He didn't go so many pitches too. It was 77. But by the last pitch of the game really was like this 94. And it's like, okay. So velocity aside, he didn't throw strikes. 48% on the four-seamer and 45 on the slider. And that's actually the biggest concern I have is, are you actually trying to push it with the velocity? But that means then you lose the command. That said, he did get pitch separation. Like, you could see the intent here. The four-seamer's trying to go up. The splitter's trying to go down. The slider's trying to go down. The sinker's trying to go inside. It generally actually wasn't even so bad in that regard. I mean, a lot of these hits, I mean, four of them were out of the zone or on the edge to left-handers. And then one curveball away to right-hander. Yes, a curveball. And I think he got a bit singled out here. Koufax was not very kind to him in this one. So I have him as like, all right, questionable for next week. If you want to take a break for a game, it could easily be, Eric, that he got scratched and you know what, I was out of my rhythm. Now I had the weird game and then I got scratched and like new team, all that kind of stuff, weirdness. So I imagine he's gonna get back on track. It is Milwaukee, then at Cleveland, and then the Twins, and it feels like it's a very good schedule for Mize, so it should get back on track.
And Robbie Ray has gone super duper 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 sinker heavy recently, which has led to some really good ratios. The strikeouts have been less consistent. Are you suggesting we're seeing a change?
I mean, he is throwing more four seamers than sinkers now. He just started doing this
as of the last start. I mean, yes. I'm looking at like there's a seven start stretch.
Oh, absolutely. It was insanity.
Yeah. There's like a start stretch where I think he has like a 109 ERA or something like that. But again, Robbie Ray going from good home park to good home park has Houston, Milwaukee, the Mets. I don't love Milwaukee, but again, you know, it's at home. Robbie Ray's been pitching well enough. I think you're riding this out there. This is a much better rotation than we have seen from them previously. We should also just note on the news front, there was a lot of concern after Nick Pivetta left the rehab start. He then threw a bullpen immediately after the start, and then they said today he had a very normal day of recovery. There's some time left. There's like maybe 3 weeks left before we even see Pivetta, so who knows how that elbow is going to respond. But it seems like we may still be on track to get Musgrove and Pivetta back in this rotation by September. Musgrove, obviously, it's been a really, really long time since we've seen him on the mound. I would be more intrigued by Pivetta if we can get a clean rehab start or two under his belt before he comes back.
Right. So I will mention one that Robbie Ray, two starts ago, started to finally throw more of those more four seamers than sinkers. 33%, 31% after four games of like averaging 10%. It was bonkers to me. The slider has come down massively though. Just 2% thrown in his last game. I don't love that. I want him to get that right-handed slider back. And I think that's one of the bigger elements now left. So I am encouraged by this. Also, the Padres, I mean, honestly, Robbie Ray, Michael King, Casey Mize, and not so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they did what they needed to do at the deadline there, especially if Mize is okay. And you have Buehler and you have Vasquez who are going to be replaced. Vasquez did just have a good start finally, but it's not one that I'm buying whatsoever. Michael King is driving me up the wall. He has not found any sort of consistency across his arsenal. And I know that it's generally been good enough in the past 2 months, but I remember this in our midseason podcast. I was very down on Michael King then, and it's still just so frustrating. So yeah, it's good enough matchups that you're going to do it. But I understand, like, guys, if there's something really good on the wire in your 12th teamer, like, yeah, I'm okay dropping Michael King right now because he is a hipster.
Moving on to San Francisco before we wrap up this long NL segment. But they're three against Detroit, three against Houston, three at home against Colorado. It's two-start week for Blade Tidwell. And I wanted to ask you that it seems like we are going to get both Blade Tidwell and Carson Wisenhunt in the Giants rotation now. Are you intrigued by either of those guys as a waiver wire?
Man, I mean, Eno is a little bit more on Tidwell than I am because I don't really love the secondaries enough mm-hmm. for me to say, hey, cool, this four seamer that's at like 94 or 95 and is good enough. It's just he needs to have better command with what he is doing right now. And it is rocky road, and that could be enough. He can go 5-6 innings and whatnot. But otherwise, no. And I need to see more command from Carson Wisenhunt. We know that the changeup can get whiffs, 15 over 33 in that one game.
Yeah.
But the four-seamer isn't the 95 that we saw in the spring. It's 92, 93. It's just not all there yet. So I think for me, it's just Reuben Webb at this moment. Maybe Adrian Hauser can appear in
the 5 innings again. Webb. I was like, who is Reuben Webb? I've never heard of this guy before.
Reuben Webb. Yeah, that's funny. But yeah, those guys get rocky road next week. And I know Rolando Rube has gone through two games of not having the well-versed command, but he still has that curveball and changeup and sinker and cutter. And it's like, this should be fine.
Yeah. What should be fine is we're finally going to get to the AL. But we are going to do that after this break. The Orioles, they have three against Texas. They have three against Minnesota, three at Tampa Bay. It's going to be a two-start week for Trevor Rogers, who remains on this team despite the fact that he is a free agent at the end of the year. Okay. We're going to see Cade Povich this weekend. However, we are expected to get Chris Bassitt off the IL next week. So even if Cade Povich looks good on Sunday, I don't believe this is a situation where you're trying to add him. And we've talked about him before, too, of like not being super excited about Cade Povich. So this is probably just a one start stretch for Cade Povich. And then, you know, we kind of know this rotation, Brandon Young and Shane Baz, they're pitching well enough that you can stream them in certain matchups like Baz against Texas this weekend. I can see it if you need to, you know, Minnesota without Byron Buxton is an offense that maybe you can attack, but you know, they're not like the most exciting pitchers out there.
Yeah. I am a little curious about Povich because he is leaning more into the changeup now. And that's not really what we saw before. He could be that kind of swatch type with a curveball incorporated. And yeah, Trevor Rogers, I still feel like they should have dealt him, but I think they're trying to re-sign him, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I hope Chris Bassitt doesn't push away Cade Povich, though. I mean, that's really the thing that I care about the most. Otherwise, I mean, this is run of the mill.
It has to happen. I mean, I guess it doesn't have to happen. But the Orioles are one game out of the playoffs right now. Mike Elias has said, we are competing. So I think that is the mindset of a team that is going to bring a veteran and put him in the rotation rather than a young pitcher who has not performed.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm not saying you're wrong that they should.
I know. Absolutely. I'm just like, yeah. All right. Good luck.
And here we go to the Red Sox, who after trading away Connelly early, not adding any starting pitching pieces at the deadline, are going to continue with Patrick Sandoval as their number five starter for the foreseeable future. You know, Garrett Crochet has started throwing. He was throwing up to 60 feet. You're still looking at maybe like the middle of September for Crochet to come back if things go well. Tanner Houck has started throwing live batting practice and is going to go on a rehab assignment. I think Tanner Houck is a best fit on this team, maybe as like a piggyback option to Sandoval. Like he pitches like 2-3 inning stints out of the bullpen. But you know, Brian Bayo has looked really good in a bulk relief role. And so that's kind of working for them. And then all of this is basically status quo. I mean, like Sonny Gray, Ranger Suarez, Peyton Tolley, Jake Bennett, they're pitching well enough that you're throwing them against basically everybody. And then we just talked about the number five starting situation.
So there you go. I mean, Ranger Suarez hopefully gets back into his groove. He just hasn't really gotten there yet.
Yeah, and that's, you know, some injury connections are related in there as well. The Yankees, they have Atlanta this weekend, Seattle and Toronto next week. It's two-start week for Ryan Weathers. We are starting to see Carlos Rodon face live hitters. So, you know, he hasn't gotten a rehab assignment yet, but he will eventually be working his way back. So, you know, Max Fried, Garrett Cole, Cam Schlittler, you're just auto-starting. And we want to panic every time Cam Schlittler has a bad start. And sure, it's, you know, his first full major league season. Maybe there will be some tired outings at some point. You're not worried, though. Will Warren had a pretty good start against the Cardinals last night. I'm curious if you believe that that's the Cardinals offense is really struggling or, you know, you can trust Will Warren next week against the Mariners.
I mean, Will Warren did show up with his changeup. And I think that's one of the interesting things that we saw in the previous game. And he is trying to do more of it. It's 27% usage again against the lefties. Got 25% swing strikes, so 4 whiffs on 16 thrown. That is better, Will Warren, than what we have seen throughout the year. But the sweeper is still not like there. It's a 43% CSW. That's great, but just 14 thrown is a little underwhelming. We did see more curveballs as well, 73% strikes. The way I see Will Warren is like he's been four-seamer sinker for like, I don't know, a full year at this point. And it's been a little tepid. It's been just, okay, you're getting through this. For him to be that big K-minus walk guy that we saw in the first 2 months of last year, he needs to be able to throw the sweeper and the curveball and the changeup confidently and consistently at both sides of the plate. And we haven't really seen that yet. So right now he's just kind of doggy paddling, keeping his head above water. And there is potential for him to actually get into a freestyle and go further into games. I do wonder, though, if Will Warren is the guy that gets bounced for Rodon, not Weathers. Weathers has been pitching really well so far, and Warren's skill set just kind of speaks more to long relief than it is an overpowering start on a given day. So it's something to monitor to see if he can really adapt and really get the changeup and sweeper, really both breaking balls back. So I'm okay against the Mariners, but I'm not really enthused by it.
I do love the doggy paddle into freestyle thing. I think you should make that a little bit more consistent.
Thank you.
We should also note, if you were waiting for a September Clark Schmidt return, he has renewed soreness in his elbow. And so that's not great. No. I wouldn't be counting on Clark Schmidt at any point this season. If the Yankees get anything from him, that would be a bonus. But for fantasy purposes, I wouldn't count on that. Rays, they have three at Seattle. They have then three at the Athletics, important to note, next week. That's in Sacramento. And then three against Baltimore. It's two-start week for Freddie Peralta at Las Vegas. I don't know why I said Sacramento. At Las Vegas and then against Baltimore. Listen, it is.
Yeah, what are you doing in Las Vegas? Sacramento. They're not there yet. Yeah, it's Sacramento. It's the Green Mile. He just went from Colorado to Sacramento. The Green Mile is coined by California.
Their AAA team is in Las Vegas, so I keep.
I see. Because it acts like Peralta is a AAA player now. Yeah.
Yes, he and it is a AAA stadium. Listen, there is a narrative and there is a path forward for the Rays to make some improvements for Freddie Peralta. You've talked about him. I've talked about him. Everybody's talked about him. We don't have to do it again, but it's hard to trust him in Sacramento. In that next start, if he pitches better and you want to use him against Baltimore in Tampa Bay, that's a separate story. Ian Seymour is remaining in this rotation for right now while Shane McClanahan is on the injured list, and Ian Seymour is back to looking pretty good. He's got at Seattle and then Baltimore. So I think if you had worried about Ian Seymour, if he was dropped, keep rolling with Ian Seymour for right now. And then Rasmussen and Jax are just rock solid. I think you're starting them against basically anybody.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I think with Peralta too, by the way, if you guys were expecting major changes in his first start, you shouldn't have. Yeah. And also it was at Colorado and it's just, that's not going to work out. So right. I would wait until the Baltimore start at the earliest to start Freddie Peralta, see what's going on. But you might have to just wait after that. And if you haven't dropped Peralta at this point, you probably should. Nick Martinez with a good bounce back against the Rockies is really nice to see for a guy that's been a Vargas role the entire season. Hopefully it wasn't a Dennis where that is, it shows up and doesn't stay around for long, just like 30 Rock Dennis. But otherwise, we're going to start Ian Seymour, who's been looking good and also having openers, which is lovely. And of course, Griffin Jackson, Rasmussen.
Yeah. The Blue Jays, they have Philadelphia this weekend, then 4 games against Boston and 3 against the Yankees. So it's a 2-start week for both Jameson Taillon and Dylan Cease. I know you have been a Jameson Taillon fan in the past. He is now in the Toronto bullpen. It's a 2-start week. Sorry, Toronto rotation. It's a 2-start week. It is not a great 2-start week with the Red Sox and the Yankees, but in a 15-team league, do you think that because of what he's done for us in the past, you are okay adding Jameson Taillon?
Did you know he had 16 whiffs last night? 16. I did. 16 in 4 innings and 3 earned runs and 6 hits and 2 walks. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some tipping happening with him with the Cubs, just because it was so unlucky. I mean, he was throwing good pitches and guys were hitting it and everything like that. And with Taillon in Toronto, sure, it's not as good of a situation, like just the reverse of Gausman here, right?
Yeah.
However, it is really funny to see him as opposite of Dylan Cease, Soriano, and formerly Savage as a strike thrower as opposed to the Pease guys. Poor execution, awesome stuff. So I think there is an opportunity. He does give himself a chance for success each night, right? And I wouldn't rule out that Jameson Taillon could be effective here. He is throwing a harder cutter now. He is throwing a harder curveball. And it is actually more like two different curveballs with slider in there. I think he's going to be focusing on a gyro at this point around like 86. That's kind of like the almost the Kumar Rocker one or the a little different. But I think that can be very effective for him. So I'm not going to rule it out. I don't really love these outings necessarily, and I would wait to see Taillon really pull it off first before going for it. In meanwhile, Shane Bieber looked much better in his last one than he did in the 0.2 inning game. So I am hoping that this version of Bieber, which has the same movement from last year, it's just really about locations of those breaking balls to get those strikeouts like he used to. I think he can get there in time. I'm curious if it's going to happen as soon as the Phillies and the Yankees.
Moving on to the AL Central, we got the White Sox. They get Cleveland this weekend, home against Cincinnati, and then at Detroit. It's two-start week for Sean Burke. Sean Burke, who now is probably the only White Sox pitcher that I can use in fantasy, depending on Anthony Kay in certain matchups, I'm okay with because, you know, I think he's been fine. I'm Davis Martin. If you're still holding on to him, it's time to move on. The beginning of the year is no longer here.
Yeah, Davis Martin, you don't want to go for whatsoever. Anthony Kay is looking a little bit better. I mean, he is going generally inside with his sinkers to left-handers. Wasn't as good last time, but he is throwing a lot of pitches effectively against right-handers. I led with him as the K fastball, which is the way fastball. Great song from the 90s. And it is a fastball that overperformed last time. I don't expect it to stick around. I'm not going to go after Noah Schultz. I'm not going to go after Luis Castillo until really Schultz really impresses me. It's too bad that Burke was bad last night, but I wouldn't worry about that one.
Yeah, just he ran into a buzzsaw. You know what I mean? It's hard against the Red Sox. Moving on to the Tigers. They have San Francisco this weekend, three against Cleveland next week, and then three against the White Sox. We should see the return of Jackson Jope. Now, I should just say before I ask for your thoughts that Jackson Jope is A, coming off a major arm surgery, and B, prior to getting hurt last year, had an 18% strikeout rate in his near 50 MLB innings. So even though Jackson Jope is a big name prospect, we have yet to see him produce real fantasy goodness in his MLB career because the strikeouts just have not been there. There's not been a lot of whiffs. And so that's not to say you shouldn't be interested in Jackson Jope, but I don't think that we should treat this as like a rock solid young pitcher who's, you know, who is right back in the rotation. It's a guy who had some adjusting to do, who's now coming off a major arm surgery and has to get back and make those adjustments at the big league level. And it might not happen right away.
Right. So what we have seen is just under 70 pitches in his last rehab start. It was an A-plus ball, 10 whiffs, 5 Ks, 4 innings. Nothing here is really showcasing that, oh, yeah, he's so dope and, like, he is the best thing ever again, right? So I hope so. I really do. I mean, 26% K rate in 15 innings and 5 rehab starts, fine. But it's not a lock, right? And if I have him as a questionable just because it's exciting. In general, I would say treat it like a pilot rule. Prospect's initial line often terrible. Treat it like that because, yeah, his opening season was not really, it was relieving first, and then he came in, he was arguably hurt, and that's why it wasn't as good.
Maybe.
But, right, this is a guy who has that potential. I mean, it's easy for us to put him in the Bubba Chandler and Jared Jones bucket, and it's kind of funny at this point.
I mean, maybe he is in the Bubba Chandler bucket.
Yeah, right. I think it's worthwhile. Very much as a spec ad.
Sure.
And I would be going for that one. And that's kind of why I have him where I do. Expectations should be tempered.
I would prefer adding Keydair Montero.
Interesting.
Who gets San Francisco and then Cleveland. And Montero has just been a really good, like, I have a deep arsenal of pitches and I throw them for strikes. And it's a little bit of like we've talked about how those types of pitchers get undervalued. And so in plus matchups, and I do believe San Francisco and Cleveland are plus matchups, I think that Montero is a solid ad. So if you're looking for long-term, like shot in the dark, swing for the fences, yes, you'd go with Jope. If you're looking for immediate production in the next 2 weeks, I would go with Keydair Montero. And then it's Drew Anderson who gets a two-start week next week, Cleveland and the White Sox. I just wanted to know if you were at all interested in Drew Anderson for any formats.
I'm curious. He needs to get stretched out. And I don't know how long this is going to last for Drew Anderson, but I'm curious. I mean, we might be seeing Ty Madden follow him
maybe
in those games too.
Yeah.
But yeah, we haven't really seen him probably start. He does have a split change that can work. We'll see.
Moving on to the Royals. They have the Cubs this weekend, the Dodgers next week, and then the Angels. And so the Angels series is going to be Lugo, Dobnak, and Cameron. And so those are the names to keep in mind, because you probably don't want to start any of these guys against the Cubs and the Dodgers. It's just not a good situation for wins and against two good offenses. But I do want to ask you about Noah Cameron, because he's been pitching really well the last three starts, and that Angels start looks really enticing. But in leagues like in NFBC formats, where you're locked into the whole week, he gets the Dodgers start on Monday. So in a 12-team format, given how Noah Cameron has been pitching, would you lock him in a two-start week for Dodgers-Angels?
So one thing I do want to know, and I just sent this to you on Discord, Eric, is that Josh Berry let me know that there is a really good quote on Noah Cameron saying that he shifted to call his own pitches. And it's really just that Noah Cameron, you know, fantastic quote where he's saying it has nothing to do with the catchers because they've been amazing all year. Just a little bit of, I guess, my idea, a little stubbornness from me, which is a perfect way of saying, like, look, it's not your fault, guys. It's just I need to know what I need. And I love this. I feel like more guys should be calling their own pitches. And he's actually done well since doing that. So there's something to be said about that. Obviously, the increased velocity is there. But we've now seen not just one, not just two, but we've seen three games of Noah Cameron look fantastic. It is 0-0, one earned run, 7-8-8 when it comes to the inning totals. 8 strikeouts, 7, 9, 17 whiffs, 15, 17. His four-seamer is harder. It's at 93 to 95 now. It's kind of cool, Eric. He's getting his command back. It looks like the good Noah Cameron from last year. Better even in some ways. I'm down. I'm going to go for it because I don't feel like this is just a flash in the pan for Noah Cameron. Is it going to be the best start against the Dodgers? No, probably not for Noah Cameron, but I'm still going to do it.
Give it a go. The Twins, they have Milwaukee this weekend, Baltimore and Philadelphia next week. It's two-start week for Dean Kramer against Baltimore and Philadelphia. You don't want to do that. And then we should just note, Joe Ryan went back to Minnesota yesterday, Wednesday, for a lower body injury. Yeah. This almost seems like you're getting another, hey, post-trade deadline, Joe Ryan is either going to get hurt or start pitching poorly. And I think we're going to see Joe Ryan on the IL. That's a prediction. That's not a report, just so we know. But that would take Joe Ryan out of this rotation. And he's really the only guy that you can trust right now. You know, Taj Bradley, we know, has his moments, and you kind of never know when the command is going to be there. And when it is, he can certainly pitch well against any of these teams. And so if you wanted to take a gamble, fine. Connor Prelip is somebody that I think you and I are both still interested in as a pitcher. And in that Baltimore game next week, I maybe could take a gamble in like a 15-team league, but I don't know that I could start Connor Prelip over the weekend against the Brewers.
Yeah, I understand that. Connor Prelip, we're just wondering how he's going to progress. His secondaries were much better last time. Really sad about Joe Ryan. I remember writing him up being like, I'm terrified because you are seeing now the lower velocity and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it did not look good in the last one. Yeah, I mean, Taj Bradley is just chaos. Dean Kramer could be worthwhile in your 15-teamers. I'm going to throw that out there. The cutters have actually been well-located. It just hasn't been a really good package so far. And you can really see the frustration after he was yelling at Pete Alonso, like, are you looking? Like, you could see that there was just complete discomfort from himself.
I think he was asking if there was a glare. Like, can you see?
Oh, is that it? Can you see? Okay. Yeah. All right, fair enough. It felt like he was just not... Yeah, he was calling out his teammate for a stupid reason. Yeah. And that kind of thing is like, look, you're just really frustrated mentally and everything. And there's so much of this game. I was actually talking again to Tyon about this. So like, he was saying that his confidence was going down even because they were hitting things. And it's like, I'm doing the exact same thing, though. I shouldn't lose that confidence. Like, this has worked for so long. It's just this brief moment for whatever reason. This is not working. And now all of a sudden, I'm pitching worse because of that. Like, it impounds. And it's silly. their brains are working against us a lot. So I think that was a bit of a situation with Dean Kramer. I wouldn't be surprised if this is worthwhile in your 15-teamers. It's not worth it in a 12-teamer just to expect it to be better all of a sudden for Kramer.
We're going to end with the AL West. We're going to start with the Athletics, who get Boston this weekend, then Tampa Bay and Texas next week. All of those games are in Sacramento.
Yes, and I'm going to tell you all about those with Eric after this break.
I was going to power through everybody, but we're going to know that we can't go fast. So we're going to take that ad break. The only pitcher that you seem to have confidence starting next week in Sacramento is Jacob Lopez.
Yes.
Explain to the people why.
Yes. Jacob Lopez. Remember last year? He was literally an ace for 13 games. It was like a 2 ERA with a 30% K rate. It was nuts. And then all of a sudden he got hurt. And then I was in the offseason, be like, oh, maybe he can come back. He was hurt a little bit at the beginning of the year, just never got into any sort of rhythm. Mm-hmm. However, the last three games from Jacob Lopez, I mean, Jay Crumpler again highlighted it. I would have done a lead myself with him, but he did it with a Lopez dispenser with a dispenser or whatever it was. He highlighted the fact that Jacob Lopez is doing the same command or approach that he did last year. He's executing this, which is cutters coming back over the plate up and away to right-handers with four-seamers staying away from them. So it's kind of like the X Games of David Cone, where you go down and away with sliders coming in and then cutters going or sliders going off and then two-seamers coming back. It's the same kind of thing with cutters and four-seamers upstairs for Jacob Lopez. And then he also has a really good sweeper or slider sweeper, whatever you want to call it, that is landing low for them. It's worked. It is getting strikeouts for Jacob Lopez right now. I am telling you, this is a different guy. He's executed the same approach for at least three starts and not four now. And now he gets the Rays and the Rangers. I am in. I'm going for this. I'm also very curious about Barnett. And no one talks about Barnett, but Barnett is like another Jack Perkins type of, hey, you have kind of cool stuff. Just can you locate it? I don't know yet, but keep an eye on him.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm definitely not in Sacramento. But yes, I would agree to keep an eye on. Houston gets San Diego this weekend, San Francisco next week, and Seattle. It's currently a two-start week for Hayden Wesneski. However, we should just note that as of today, Thursday afternoon, the Astros have TBD listed to start on Sunday. That was scheduled to be Christian Javier, but if they do something else on Sunday and they bump Javier and Javier winds up starting on Monday, say, then it wouldn't be a two-start week for Wesneski. And so we just may have some shifting around in how the Astros run the rotation next week. And so you just want to, if you're doing your bids on Sunday, you just want to keep an eye on that, because if you're bidding on Hayden Wesneski because you think he's going to get a two-start week, but he doesn't get that Monday start, that obviously drastically impacts your bids.
Now, where are you seeing that TBD? I mean, I know a lot of teams have not necessarily announced who is going for Sunday's games yet. I see only 40% are confirmed. But I mean, I would imagine Javier is pitching that one, and Javier is
so looking Chandler much better. Chandler Rome yesterday listed Ronel Blanco Friday, Peter Lambert Saturday, TBA, sorry, not TBD, even though it's the same thing. But TBA Sunday.
That's very interesting. Coming from a beat reporter as opposed to just like waiting for the team to report it. Vast difference. I'm shocked because Christian Javier to me is a much better pitcher than he was previously for the past 3 years, because he has that new cutter that's really a stabilizing pitch for him now.
I don't know if it I wonder if it's a Tatsuya Imai looked really good in bulk relief. Why don't him another turn in the rotation?
No.
I mean,
it could be that. It could be then six man, try and see how that works, and then Javier gets pushed. I'll say this. If Javier is not removed from the rotation, I'm very interested in him. Mm-hmm. Wesneski at Oracle Park. I think Wesneski really executed the approach beautifully. Like, it was textbook of locating his offerings last time. And when I see that just for one game, I get intrigued, because it showcases that you do have that. You do have the intent, and you also have in your wheelhouse the ability to properly command for a full start. And not have like some of it well commanded, as we see for most of the guys, but never actually doing it. It gets me more intrigued on Wesneski, especially with those sinkers inside to right-handers, and going at the Giants is like a gift. So that is an interesting one for your 12 teamers as a stream. If it is not that two-step, it's annoying for your 15 teams. I get it. So definitely monitor that. Otherwise, Peter Lambert's almost like an auto start at this point. I might even push him into that if I'm tempted later after the Padres one. And Hunter Brown, his fastball does not have the same ride that it used to. But it is still good locations. And it actually did get back to it. He did raise his arm angle a little bit. And then the sinker and four seamer are doing work. He needs to get the curveball back now, but I think it's good enough to start.
Yeah. I wrote about Hunter Brown after the one good start where his arm angle, he had a drastic arm angle change. And I do think whether that's compensating for injury or whatever, it has allowed him to find better locations. The fastball velocity is back up even without the ride. And so I think that Hunter Brown maybe isn't back to being like a, hey, this is a top 15 fantasy starter, but I think he's back to being a very solid fantasy starter. And his next two starts are against San Francisco and the Angels. And so,
I mean, yeah, just a note. Last year, he had a 17.3 vert on his four seamer, and last night, Hunter Brown 17.6.
Oh, so
with
maybe
extra, with less cut, it's like debatable. Do you want to be at a six or do you want to be an 8.5?
Yeah.
Right? I don't really care, honestly. So this is good. I'm happy to see that. It was only 50% strikes, which is a little annoying, but I'm happy to see that the ride is back. And he did have a successful start of a poor quality start with 8 strikeouts and only 5 base runners in 6 innings.
Yep. Moving to the Angels, they have 3 against Miami this weekend, 4 Texas, 3 the Royals. And so it's going to be a 2-start week for Reed Detmers, who, yes, has remained in Los Angeles, despite that false rumor that he was traded to the Cubs, which would have been really, really, really cool. But we don't have that. But you have Reed Detmers with a 2-start week against the Rangers and the Royals. And so that should make you very excited, even though the chances for wins are probably low. Also a 2-start week for Ryan Johnson, who's expected to move back into the rotation. Ryan Johnson also gets Texas and the Royals. We were briefly intrigued by Ryan Johnson at times because, you know, there's at least there's a solid enough mix against righties. And it was like, hey, can you get lefties out enough to be fine? And for a 5-start stretch, the answer was yes. And then it was very emphatically no after that. And so if you're in a really deep league, if you're in an AL-only league, Ryan Johnson, Texas, Royals, I think it makes sense. If you're in a 15-team league, it's rough. But I could see if you like really, if you didn't care about win totals, I could see taking a gamble. But it is for sure a gamble. And then apparently RotoWire has invented a person named Brett Carey, who is also in the rotation.
He's thrown under 60 pitches in both of his starts. It's a 92-mile-per-hour fastball it's just not enough. I'll just put it that way. Maybe there is something there-ish, but no, he's not even stretched out right now, so we're not going to do that.
Keep an eye on George Klassen. He is a pitching prospect for the Angels, and the month of July was very good.
Klassen is so good now. I mean, this is what Eno suggested, was that he's just throwing down the middle of the plate now. He's just gloving the middle, and that means the strike rates have gone from like sub 60% to all of a sudden 65 to 70.
Yeah.
And that's a huge deal for a guy who throws hard. Yes. So definitely, that's a really good call out.
I would be shocked if Klassen isn't in this rotation midway through August, at the end of August, and they give him 4 to 6 starts to be like, can you win a job for next year?
Exactly.
And so he'd be a name to keep an eye on. Again, the win total, the wins just...
Man, we are getting close to the end of the season, Eric. Oh my gosh.
I know. Seattle, listen, it doesn't matter. It's Tampa Bay, it's New York, it's Houston. There's only 5 guys right now. Eventually, we will probably see Kate Anderson. They have said Kate Anderson will start when he comes up. They have not said when he is going to come up. If I had to guess, it would be, again, the same thing after the rookie eligibility window closes. So second half of August. But for right now, it's the same 5 guys. It's the same 5 analysis we've been giving you of those 5 guys for a very, very long time.
That would be around August 18th, I believe it would be, for Kate Anderson to retain rookie eligibility for next year. So that's going to be it.
And then Texas, they have 3 against Baltimore this weekend, and then they have 4 at the Angels and 3 at Sacramento. So it seems like it's a great matchup, but the Sacramento part of it is not ideal. It's 2-start week for Mackenzie Gore, LA and Sacramento, and then a 2-start week for Cody Bradford, who returned to the rotation. I'm curious what you thought of Cody Bradford and in what leagues you would use him next week, because at least that start against the Angels is kind of enticing.
Yeah, so Cody Bradford came out and did 70 pitches, which is kind of what we expected, 4.1 innings. But he got 5 strikeouts, 7 base runners here at 89. And what he did was kind of Cody Bradford-esque. I mean, what we remember is the 7 feet of extension. He had that. Low velocity, had that. And he's really a swatch before swatches were cool, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't have the greatest pitch separation between the four-seamer and the changeup. But that's kind of who he is. And now the more interesting question is, will he be stretched out enough for the Angels to take advantage of that one? I think so. I think you can push him to like 80, 85, and it should be fine. I'm kind of tempted to go for that one because I just really don't think that the Angels are that good. And the fact of the matter is he got 21% swing strikes on an 89-mile-per-hour four-seamer, guys.
Yeah.
Like, that is showcasing that the extension is there, the 17 inches of vert is helping, and he's locating well, and the changeup and four-seamer combo is working.
Yes. And we should also just say for the remainder of the rotation that Skip Schumacher, the Rangers manager, said that Jordan Montgomery should be up in Texas soon, but he doesn't know yet if he's going to start or relieve. Because Cody Bradford is here,
yeah,
my thinking is that Montgomery will be up in kind of like a multi-inning relief role. So for the people who have been asking us, like, should I stash Jordan Montgomery? The answer was probably always no, because we haven't seen him look good in a long time. But now that we don't even know if he's going to be starting, I think the answer is pretty emphatically no on the stashing of Jordan Montgomery.
Absolutely.
Now, because this is a big waiver wire week, I'm just very quickly going to recap some of the guys we had talked about in terms of waiver wire ads. We mentioned Patrick Sandoval, who's in that rotation. I'm still not really as an ad, but again, he's locked into that rotation spot. We mentioned Ian Seymour if he was dropped in leagues. We mentioned Jameson Taillon in deeper formats because, you know, the immediate schedule isn't good, but if you're looking for a long-term, like 15-team league kind of ad. And Nick also mentioned that Shane Bieber's last outing was better, and so if he was dropped in your leagues because people had kind of panicked on him. We mentioned Keter Montero for short term for matchups in Detroit. We mentioned Jackson Job as a potential swing in the long term. We mentioned Noah Cameron with his recent performance if he hadn't yet been scooped up in your leagues. We mentioned that we were both intrigued again still by Connor Prelip against Baltimore, but again in deeper formats. Nick mentioned Jacob Lopez as I would almost mention kind of a priority ad. He was one of the guys you were most excited about and has a 2-start week. For Houston, we mentioned Christian Javier, if he remains in the rotation, is somebody that Nick is interested in. A little bit less so, Hayden Wesneski. We mentioned Cody Bradford just now with Texas as somebody who is in the rotation, kind of a swatch before a swatch. We mentioned Tyler Mahle in the rotation in Atlanta is like, you know, not great, but a team context upgrade as well there. We mentioned Sean Manaea and Christian Scott are a little bit more intriguing against Washington next week, now that Washington is dealing with so many injuries. Andrew Painter is more intriguing to us. We should note, as we didn't before, that he left the last start with a hamstring issue that he claims is not an issue. But again, just look for news on that on Sunday before you make that ad. We mentioned Andrew Alvarez as a, if you only care about strikeouts and he's getting more of a run in the Nationals, but that's not something we love. For the Cubs, we mentioned Clay Holmes if he hadn't yet been scooped up, but in leagues, Clay Holmes is somebody that we're really intrigued by. Nick said not to forget about Rhett Lauder for the Reds. He is locked into that rotation right now. For the Pirates, Carmen Wodzinski is back in the rotation, but again, not fully stretched out yet. Hunter Dobbins intrigued Nick.
Very intriguing. He lives in my head rent free right now.
Yeah, and he has a 2-start week next week, so that would be a name. Mitch Bratt is somebody who looked a little better in the last outing and gets Colorado at home on Monday. Rocky Road, and so if you wanted to take that gamble, and then Nick and I were both kind of like tepid on Blade Tidwell and Carson Wisenhunt, but they are in rotations. And so again, if you're in really deep formats and you're just looking for guys who start, you know, they have an opportunity.
I do have one more thing I do need to mention about Andrew Painter. And before I do, by the way, guys, you should be getting PL Pro yearly, 15% off yearly with promo code dashboard. Then goal right now is next week. You are going to get my baseball dashboard inside of the PL Pro dashboard. Like the thing I've been using all season, I'm using right now during this podcast to analyze every single starting pitcher and quickly get amazing assessments on them. it's in your hands starting next week. It's our alpha of the PL Pro dashboard as we lead to 1.0 in March. And you guys pay for a year. You pay one thing and you get more later. So price stays the same and the product gets better and better with your support. Thank you guys so much. 15% off promo code dashboard. But Andrew Painter, I'm not going to be writing him favorably for the SP Roundup because this is not pitching backward. I didn't catch this before when we talked about 38% four-seamer usage, 40% overall, where sweepers and sliders were thrown 17 times total in the 63 pitches. Really just not it. The changeup was only a 53% strike rate. Not the Andrew Painter that we saw last week. So I'm less encouraged about the future than I was before, not knowing this one initially for Andrew Painter. So be careful going after that one.
Be careful, but again, a reminder that it's St. Louis, Minnesota, and then St. Louis again. So St. Louis, Minnesota, St. Louis are his next three. So even if we are not as enthusiastic as we were before, there's still some minor intrigue and the matchups are pretty good. And so if you wanted to roll the dice, you still...
Yeah, maybe the hamstring did affect him, but it's really about the approach that bothers me the most here.
For sure. Thanks for sticking with us for this long one. Hopefully we got you as much information as you needed after the trade deadline, ahead of your waiver wires, ahead of the rest of the season. So hopefully this is good. We will not be going near an hour and a half beyond that. But so we're going to sign off very quickly now. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Line.
And I'm going to go figure out this whole whitewashed microphone situation.